The Wellstone, a novel by Will McCarthy. Recording copyright 2002 by Will McCarthy. This novel, read to you by the MAPI41 speech synthesizer, may be distributed freely. The Wellstone, ISBN 0553584464, was published by Bantam Books in 2003, and is available in paperback form wherever fine books are sold. Chapter 1-4. Restoration day. It was 5 p.m. and hotter than hell when Shmari set off, on foot, for the rendezvous point. 8 kilometers from home, farther than she'd ever walked in her life, but with 4 days' warning she'd had time to search the product libraries for a really comfortable pair of mischief shoes, and a walking stick of hollow diamond that weighed nothing, and looked like a soap bubble, and collapsed to the size of her pinky when she slipped it in her pocket. She could wish for a closer rendezvous, but A, like everyone else in the worlds, she was in perfect physical condition, and B, getting word out to Feck had been difficult and risky, and getting word back from him had nearly blown everything. Shmari had had to company opt a classmate, a girl she barely knew but saw regularly in the one place she was still allowed to go, but the girl, Wandy Strug, had no idea there was anything illegal going on. She thought it was a simple case of forbidden love, and had read Feck's message aloud, right in front of Herr Dr. Professor Blonst. Commons Park, at 15th Street on the east bank of the Platte, 7 p.m. sharp. Bring 6 garlands, a sketch plate, and something discreet to protect your knees and elbows. Wandy was smirking when she said it, no mystery what she was thinking, but Herr Dr. Professor sniffed something amiss in the words, and looked up from his desk, straight into Shmari's face. Are you in some trouble, young lady? His voice was like an old cartoon, from the days when people had real accents, and while his skin was smooth, his hair was an honest shade of gray. Herr Doctor was a kindly old busybody. Everyone knew it. Too kindly, too old, too difficult to fool. No, sir, she'd answered coolly, fighting down the urge to imitate his voice. But the hot flush of her face had said otherwise. It's her boyfriend, Wandy crooned, thinking she was simply embarrassing a classmate. But it was that very obliviosity that saved the day. Herr Doctor looked Wandy over, weighing her words and her tone, and found no trace of guilt or deceit. You should be more considerate, he told Wandy. These matters are always delicate, to Shmari he said, they have sensors in those parks, you know. If you want an area for private use, I suggest you make a reservation. Shmari had nodded and retreated, too choked with fear and embarrassment to make any reply. She hadn't opened her mouth in class any class in the 4 days since then. It was to close a call, and she didn't care to risk it any further. It was a punishment she feared, but compassion, because the wisdom of age would shut her down if it could. Show her the foolishness and futility of all her best laid plans. In their version of tranquility she would do nothing, accomplish nothing, be nothing. So here she was, hiking through the western suburbs toward the aforementioned park, with an enormous rucksack on her back, bursting with phony decorations. She must have looked ridiculous who carried things anymore, who walked, but all kinds of strange things took place on Restoration Day. Being the celebration of monarchy itself, the 14th of July was easily the wildest of queendom holidays. Possibly the only day when a gathering of riders could go unnoticed until the ride had actually begun, speaking of which. She dug the sketch plate out of her pocket and checked the time. And promptly cursed under her breath, because it was 6:58 already. She'd miscalculated her walking time, seeing straight lines on a map without realizing how meandering and indirect the paths and roads really were. She also checked her news headlines, and was annoyed to see that NAVYSEARCH was still CLOSINGINONMISSINGCAMPERS. That particular headline had been recycled almost daily for the past 2 weeks, and told her nothing at all, which was frustrating, because she just wanted one little question answered. Was she aboard that ship or wasn't she? And if so, she also wouldn't mind knowing why, and how. So that was 3 questions, still not much to ask, but she'd begun to fear there would never be any answers for her. Which simply hardened her resolve to do something meaningful in the here and now. Approaching the Platte, she left the street proper and passed through a garden of low trees and struggling midsummer flowers. The pathway was marked with hanging chains, and led to a sturdy Wellstone footbridge, with chest-high walls topped by rails of bright green. Even this late in the day, the river itself was full of vesters, children and grown-ups alike swathed in flotation plastics and engrossed in the annual raise day ritual of beating themselves senseless on the rocks and rapids, hooting and screeching among females. They paid not one bit of attention to Shmari and her anomalous rucksack. Across the bridge was another park where dozens of children, maybe 6 years old and all dressed in various shades of not quite royal purple, played and danced to the drummy, twangy strains of Chongan music. But this was Confluence Park, not Commons Park. So Shmari continued on, following the sidewalk south around a set of enormous power transformers and across a deserted street. Like most of the journey, This was all new to Shmari, a slice through the city of Herbert which she'd never seen or even imagined before. It was obvious and yet startling that Denver existed continuously at ground level, with amazing sprawls of cultured space in between the familiar landmarks. A set of rock stairs led down an incline. And there, finally, was the rendezvous point. A sweep of hilly meadow dotted with trees, and crisscrossed by well-stone paths. Suddenly, Shmari knew exactly where she was. On the hillside overlooking the ruins of Café 1551, now an empty foundation domed over with the yellow mesh of a police cordon. CRIMESCENEDONOTTAMPER Feck was up ahead, in a kind of gazebo looming over the park from the crown of its highest hill. There were two other boys with him, and two other girls, one leaning against him in a rather familiar way. Shmari waved, and Feck must have been watching the path, because he saw her and waved back almost immediately. He said something to the girl beside him, and she pulled away and stood up straighter. Shmari's heart quickened, all the excitement and uncertainty of recent weeks coming finally to a head. What she felt when she saw his face, his figure against the skyline, was hard to describe and equally hard to ignore. Enthrallment, good fortune, an abeyance of her bitter frustration, she lost sight of him as the path curved behind the hill, but she followed it around and up, and soon enough she was throwing herself into his arms. Hi! She laughed. Hi back, he said, smiling but disengaging himself. You're a bit late, I know. Sorry, he nodded, looking agitated. Yeah, our timing is important. You brought the garlands, right here. She parted the rucksack's buckles with a murmured command, then slid the strap off one shoulder and wriggled free. Good. Shmari Lee Wing, meet Riot Cell 1. Bob Smith, Cherry Florence, Wang Twang, and Patience Electric. Hi, Cherry, Shmari said, surprised to see one of her close friends here. Cherry was, in fact, the girl who'd been leaning on Feck 60 seconds ago. The others Shmari didn't know, although they looked familiar. Wasn't sure you were going to make it, Cherry said, looking her over with a funny kind of disapproval. After the cafe incident, I heard from you, what, one time, I'm really sorry. I was grounded, I would send a message, but I hate to cut this short, Feck said, but it's less than 2 hours till showtime, and we've got 6 major intersections to decorate. Grinning, Shmari stuck her hand up. What's our plan, Cuddy? Feck glared for a moment, then put a hand on her elbow and led her a few meters away from the others. This is not a picnic, all right, let's keep things formal, her voice stiffened. I'm just asking, Feck. What are we doing? He showed her a length of shiny white wellstone twine, then stepped back and turned so the others could see it as well. You know what are not mamas, these garlands, these decorative spike traps of yours, will be tied to the light poles with these little strings. Securely, right, but at 9 p.m, they all come undone and fall in the street, halting the flow of wheel traffic, and then what? One of the boys, the one Feck had introduced as Bob, wanted to know. Then we go straight to the police station, Feck said. Bob was aghast. We turn ourselves in. We create a distraction. We get inside and block the fax machines, or disable them, or better yet commandeer them to print our own army. Failing that, we obstruct the exits with park benches and trash tubes, or with our bodies. There are only 5 fax machines inside which are big enough to instantiate a police officer, and only 3 fixed doorways out of the building. Shmari, feeling surly and snubbed, said, what is it, a medieval castle? They can open a doorway anywhere they want, all it takes is a whisper, and 1,000 cops are bursting out into the street. Of course they can, Feck agreed. We can't stop the police or constabulary. We can't even really delay them, then what's the point? Bob demanded angrily, Feck could only shrug. Who can say, what's the point of anything? This is a performance, Bob, we're inspiring emotion, there are 20 other riot cells in place, scattered around the downtown district. We go for the fax depots, the news stations, all the centers of control, we make a show of it. Why? Because that's what Prince Bascom wants, that's all you and I need to know, but we get caught right away, Bob complained. We don't stand a chance, Feck made a face, and matched it with a sarcastic flutter of his hands. We all get caught, Bob, I don't see any way around it, best case, this'll be, like, a 5-minute riot. I thought that was self-evident, do you want out? He scanned the 5 faces around him. If anyone wants out, just walk away now, no questions. The other boy, Wang Twang, wordlessly turned his back and started down the path. Then he paused, and almost cast a glance over his shoulder, but he aborted it just as quickly, and resumed walking. Feck sighed. Damn, all right, anyone else? Bob, no, Bob said, his eyes on Twang's retreating form. My calendar's clear, pretty much forever. You didn't get caught at 1551 last month, Shmari said to Feck.
That was a fluke.
Was it?
I wonder.
How many of these riot cells have you for a leader?
Just the one, Feck said impatiently.
I can't use the facts, see, I'm caught if I do. So I'm effectively singled. Well, how many individuals do we have stationed in more than one cell?
All their freedom requires is for one copy to escape, right?
A few individuals, Feck allowed.
Not many. We don't want people going too far beyond their normal patterns too early, attracting attention and all that.
Look, none of this matters right now. We need to get moving. He glanced at the little washroom enclosure just off the gazebo's east side. Does anyone need the Sawyer?
To relieve themselves?
No. Well, let's proceed, then. He led them through the park and across the street where, to everyone's surprise, Wang Twang was waiting for them.
My apologies, he said.
Is Anamas Waffler still welcome among you?
Oh, absolutely, Feck answered, handing him one of Shmari's holiday garlands.
I'm pleased you changed your mind, again. Then he dug something out of his pocket. A little ball of super absorber black, and tossed it lightly over the wall, into the hulking power transformer Shmari had passed on the way in.
What was that?
She asked, and for the first time that evening, Feck chuckled.
That was nothing, dear, that was nothing at all. Shall we go do this thing?
And meet whatever fate awaits us, Shmari agreed, then kissed him hard on the mouth while Cherry Florence glared on.